Yes. And thoughts of I matter. So it's this balance between feeling and thought, and shame can scramble both. And that's why we just want to kind of like trust that on the other side of these disempowering thoughts and feelings will be our true thoughts about ourselves.
AJ Bond is a shame educator and the author of this book we've been talking about, Discomfortable: What is Shame and How Do We Break Its Hold? We'll continue this interview next week. Until then, thank you so much for listening, and take good care of yourselves and each other. If you missed any of the show, you can find this and all Magical Mysteries Tour shows at soundcloud.com/WGDR. That's soundcloud.com/WGDR.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members and the Patricia Reeser Center for the Arts, presenting multi-instrumentalist traditional American musicians Dirk and Amelia Powell on Thursday, November 14th. Also performing will be Caleb Clowder and Reeb Willems, celebrating the release of their new album, Gold in Your Pocket. Tickets and information for the November 14th show in Beaverton at www.thereeser.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:01 a.m. Next up is The Dirtbag.
Okay, there we go. Jim, we're on. Ho! No comments.
We can pretend the music played.
Right. Is Jim's mic going? Because I hear me, but I don't hear Jim too well.
Uh-oh.
Oh, there, now I hear Jim. Can okay. Hear
okay.
Okay. We how charming, how alarming and charming it is to be a farming. Mm. That's the that's abbreviated version.
Yeah, that's good. I don't have any tune though. I can sing, but I'll tell. But we do every time I cross the Columbia River, we with the grandkids or just me and my partner Lorraine, we sing roll on Columbia, roll on.
All right,
roll on Columbia, roll on.
Teaching
your
them.
Power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on Columbia, roll on. So okay.
Yeah. Now for our recently arrived Oregonians, and now we'll introduce the show. That was a song by Woody Guthrie, yeah. And as you might have guessed, it references the Bonneville Dam. And why did he write out, or I guess we couldn't say sell out, but why did he write that song? Because he was hired by the Bonneville Power Administration to do that.
Yep, pretty amazing songwriter. And,
yes.
Wonderful songs.
And that's a good visual.
So the grandkids now sing it, you know, with us.
Oh, good.
And they're 9, 7, and 4. So I'm
going to have a four-part harmony song. Maybe yeah. not. Okay, well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen. Welcome to The Dirtbag, a garden variety show. And to my right is my co-pilot, Jim Gilbert.
Nice to see you again, Glenn. Last month we weren't able to have an up-to-date show.
No, so. I was out of town, and our erstwhile personal engineer, Joe, of Bergman Productions, had a death in the family. Yep. And so we could not record the show at the last moment. I left town, and so hopefully the show from last year got played.
I understood that it did.
Okay, good. Yep. Good deal.
Yep.
But we have a brand new show today. We're here live in the studio. We welcome your calls to 503-231-8187. That's the number for gardening questions. And if you have a stab, a guess, or you know the answer to the garden snupper that is coming up at 1:30, we will also have a new plant of the month tasks for the fall right now, because as I said in the blurb that I wrote for KBOO, that it's a lot better to do the plant protection and pipe protection now when it's somewhat pleasant outside rather than wait. So when it may be too late.
So that old Chinese proverb modified a little bit. The best time to protect your pipes and all was a month ago. The second best time is now.
Yes. Well, it'd be more apt at December 20th or whatever.
All right. Sure.
But you said modified, so.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, if we have time, we'll talk about protecting plants and other tasks to do at this time of the year. And maybe we'll continue our honey extraction, or what is honey, little primer, and also have our dirtbag dictionary term and what I'm trying to understand this month. And we'll just get to that right now. I was thinking more about this on my bicycle ride in, and we have, you know, smart refrigerators, and we have smart thermostats. Why can't we have smart traffic signals? Or I would even settle for junior high smart traffic signals. For example, why not after 11 o'clock have a traffic signal on the main drag turn to flashing yellow and the side streets flashing red? That just seems much better than sitting there, if you have a gas car, burning gas. So, maybe some of these new Portland City Council members will be able to take that up, because I'm sure probably 80% of them listen to The Dirtbag.
Absolutely, I'm sure. And welcome to your new jobs.
They're off to the right start. Okay, well, first of all, let us deal with a writer, a listener who wrote in to the dirtbag at kboo.org. That is our email address, thedirtbag@kboo.org. And from our listener, Jim. Now, this came in a month and a half ago, but we didn't have a live show last month. So I will read what he has said, and then we will deal with it. I covered the pathways between my raised beds with a double layer of landscape cloth held down with staples about 2 years ago. Weeds started growing through it and in the chips on top of the cloth fairly soon. I weed other pathways with a diamond-headed weeder, It works well, but when I use it on pathways with landscape cloths, the weeder tears up the cloth and won't work. Now the pathways between my raised beds have tons of weeds. I am tearing out the landscape cloth. How would you cover these pathways for lowest maintenance?
You know, that's a really good question. Now I remember this question, and I don't, we didn't respond in writing.
No, we didn't. It came in after the September show.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, the one thing that strikes me right away, we use landscape fabric quite a lot at our nursery.
Yes.
And
But could I clarify?
Sure.
It's not necessarily between pathways.
We do it between pathways too.
Two. Okay. Very good.
Between our garden beds, our nursery beds,
okay.
We also use landscape fabric.
Okay.
And that was actually an energy saving measure, as it turned out. And the first thing that strikes me about the email is reminds me of a big mistake I made about 10 years ago when I first started experimenting with landscape fabric. Don't put anything on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the weeds, in my experience, the weeds don't go from the bottom up through it.
Right.
They will grow down. The roots will, the fine roots can go through it going down. And we had I had a major mess I had to deal with after, because I thought, well, wow, I've put nice straw mulch on top of this landscape fabric. Doesn't that look nice, you know?
And for a little while.
Yeah, and it just was a big mess, big problem. So, uh-huh. Yeah, it's not real pretty. I mean, it's a black fabric.
Yes.
But maybe you could paint it green. But in terms of weeds, you're definitely... don't have something on top that'll where the seeds will germinate and the roots will go through.
Yes, it is effective from preventing weeds from coming up, but not necessarily from going down where they have plenty of light and possibly water.
Yeah.
So I did respond to Jim just briefly, and we're covering it more in depth now. Jim may have moved out of the country by now, for all we know. But
threw his hands up in the air.
Yeah, right, those guys. And what I recommended is what I do, and that is put layers of cardboard down, and then I cover that. Because the cardboard will last, at least 2 years, depending on how many layers, and sometimes it's three layers of cardboard, hardly ever just one layer. If I have a lot of cardboard, I use more. And then I cover that with wood chips. The same thing can happen, but the cardboard prevents weeds from growing on both sides, from the bottom and the top. And it looks good if you can use anything, leaves, shredded leaves, you know, dried grass, although that can get a little slimy when they do reconstitute themselves.
Yeah.
Or straw.
Yeah.
Just anything. So that's what I recommend. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's not no maintenance. It can be no maintenance for a couple of years. But then you kind of have to start over again. And that's easy enough to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I said, landscape fabric for us became a game changer for us, because we were losing the battle with weeds. And, you know, we have a pretty good size area and have to pay people to do the weeding work. And we couldn't hire people. And it's a long story, yeah. Basically. We first saw the use of landscape fabric in Korea on permanent plantings in a evaluation block of plants, and I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. Look at that. And it really made a tremendous difference,
yeah,
for us.
So you use it for both the pathways and the plantings?
Yeah. Well, actually, the planting itself, where we grow our we have our cuttings, we stick our cuttings, and we plant our seeds, and we also have our staff, all of our nursery employees have their own garden area. The bed is covered with very thin plastic.
Not landscape fabric. Okay.
Because the landscape fabric is much more expensive, and the plastic is much more easier to make holes in. And
yes.
And then we put between those beds, we put the landscape fabric, and we move it. So when we dig those plants out of those beds, before we dig them, we pull up the landscape fabric that's between the beds, and then when we make the new ones, we unroll it back into the new area. So it doesn't get wasted.
Good.
Yeah, works great.
Okay, so two different things here. Weed block for the pathways, plastic. And it wouldn't, plastic wouldn't work, or really any landscaping weed barrier, if you're planting a bed of carrots or beets or anything like that.
Right.
But if you're planting tomatoes or squash or something like that, you could just plant through a hole. So
And it, I mean, I realize, you know, it's plastic, it's a waste. I don't like doing that. And I understand now that there are some pretty good biodegradable plastics, and we're doing some research on that.
Good.
Find out what we can do.
Well, if you, when you get it installed, get the timeline going there and say, how'd that last? Okay. Let us move on then to, we'll do our plant of the month here. Oh, no. Most used tool. Last 2 months. Well, just last month. That's more appropriate. Last 30 days. What do you think you've been using the most?
Well, without a doubt, my battery-powered electric chainsaw. Because we're actually clearing an area to put a new greenhouse in, and we had a lot of firewood to cut up. I have a lot of firewood, Glenn.
Well, you might need it.
Well, remember when it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and we had that ice storm, and we were out of power for 11 days.
Yeah,
it was sure nice to have a wood stove.
Yeah,
because we didn't have any electricity, and it was cold.
We converted to a heat pump. This was 3 years ago now, but kept our wood stove as backup, but we haven't used it at all since then. So but we'll have it for that.
Yeah.
The tool that I've been using the most, and granted, I was gone for much of the last 30 days, but more recently would be probably my pitchfork to gather leaves from the street. You just get it down, you know, the tines level with the ground right on the pavement, and push, and the leaves just stack up.
Nice.
And then when they're wet, they pretty much just stick onto the tines, and I can put them into a bin to transport them. But this was close enough. Yesterday, the leaves that I got, I just walked to the beds that I was putting them on. So more on the leaves later.
Yep.
Okay, Ty, do we have music? Okay. Ty says we have music. Well, I'll set this up here. This is, I chose these tunes for last month, but it's just as appropriate for this month. And it has to do with leaf color, because they're turning now. So we'll start with, the Ventures, Yellow Jacket. You know of any other group that only was an instrumental group? I mean, everybody knows, well, not everybody, everybody of our age knows the Ventures. Y5O.
Yeah, good question.
Walk, Don't Run.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had hits.
Yeah.
That was from 1961.
61?
Yep.
Oh, man.
Maybe you were already in the woods by then.
I was 61. I was just getting out of high school.
Well, that's why I thought you should know the Ventures. Who? What? Oh, Chet Atkins. Well, that's true. That reminds Ty, our board operator, says Chet Atkins. Dwayne Eddy, only instrumentals? Dwayne Eddy, he says? Huh. Well, that was before my time, so... That reminds me of a joke that I've told this before on the air, but I'm sure there's new listeners now about, I think this was Garrison Keillor. On his, he said that he had Chet Atkins on his show one time, and Chet Atkins says, "I have a swimming pool in the shape of a guitar amplifier." Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You probably do too, Jim. Okay. Let's get on with our plan of the month here. It's gone through a few changes now, but we're going to do... not persimmon.
Nope.
Which is what we said.
P.
It does. That's why.
Yeah.
It's a pomegranate.
Pomegranate. That is pretty amazing. That we came up with that just the last minute.
That was about 10 minutes till 12. Yeah. 11 here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So you saw pomegranates in on your trip to Turkey. Which
yes.
Sounds
yes.
pretty interesting. I wonder, could you identify that there were different varieties, or were they all the same, or what was it, what did it look like?
There were different ones, I think.
Yeah.
They might have just been different sizes. But every market that had street vendors had many, if not several, fresh pomegranate juicers. They'd cut it in half, yes, and just like an orange juicer.
Yep.
They might use the same thing, and then they'd twirl down a stainless steel bar that had the plunger, and it was tasty.
Yeah, I got that in southern Russia, one of my visits, where they were doing that same thing at a farmer's market. Well, one of the interesting things about pomegranate is here in America, when you go to the store to buy a pomegranate, you can have just about any variety you want as long as it's wonderful.
Oh, is that right?
That's the only one.
That's the variety.
So my partner, Lorraine Gardner, and I can't say enough up to honor her and her work these days in breeding work, but right now one of our projects is pomegranate because it's not a commonly grown garden fruit here in the Northwest. We just 2 days ago tasted ripe pomegranates that we had grown, one of which was like outrageous. This flavor was so good. It was sweet. It was flavorful. It wasn't real big, and the seeds were soft.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's one of the grading the characteristics of pomegranate that's valuable. Depending on the variety, is the softness of the seed. If it's real hard, it's not.
Yeah.
They're not like rocks when they're hard, but they definitely are quite something to chew on. But this one was much better than that, and we had a wonderful. To compare the varieties that we were trying to. And
was the wonderful not grown by you?
The wonderful was not grown by us.
Okay.
It's not hardy enough, typically, for our region. And it didn't pass. It was, three of the varieties that we had grown ourselves were superior, we thought, to the wonderful. And we probably had 12 or more varieties that we were tasting.
All grown by you.
All grown at our location, which, again, we've had pomegranates for many years, but we just really hadn't paid the proper attention to them. And so we finally are doing that.
Lorraine is doing it.
Yeah, well, Lorraine deserves the major credit for it. But, of course, it is a community-wide effort.
Yes, of course.
But it's wonderful, and it's wonderful. No, it's not wonderful. It's it's a pretty
yeah. Somebody
pretty
named
neat thing.
That.
So anyway, we are hoping that one of these days, soon, there will be some of these more superior varieties in the marketplace for you to try growing. And another very important part of growing pomegranates is the flower habit, and we've learned a lot about that. There are pomegranates that sound good and they bloom. We had one outside our kitchen window for many years that bloomed and bloomed and bloomed and bloomed, never set a fruit. They have female flowers, male flowers, and hermaphroditic flowers.
And all on the same
plant, typically. But if they don't have, it doesn't mean they're going to set fruit. And I'm not capable of telling the listeners more and more detail about that. Maybe I can do it the next show, and I'll ask Lorraine more about what she's learned about that. But the But it requires a certain the pollination is really, really important.
Does it need a pollinizer, another
For cross-pollination? Well, that's another question we're resolving. It's always a good idea to plant two of something for cross-pollination, but from what I understand, they are self-fertile. Pomegranates are typically self-fertile, but they need to have the proper flower set to make fruit.
Maybe timing that it blooms.
Well, that's another issue. They'll bloom all season, but they have to bloom early. Yeah. So again, another characteristic of one that works well in our climate is early blooming ones.
Because early?
Well, they'll start blooming in May.
Okay. Well, there's certainly plenty of pollinators around at that point.
Right.
The insects.
Yep. If they start blooming later, they might be okay in California, for example, but they won't have enough time to ripen their fruit here.
Yeah. So on these bushes or trees that you harvested from, were there immature fruit still on them?
And the ones that we really liked, no. That we actually harvested, the fruit was ripe, all the fruit.
All the fruit, okay.
Yeah, because they had bloomed early and had enough time to ripen it.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, it's just a beginning process right now, but I would not encourage a listener to plant the variety Wonderful.
Okay, so don't save the seed and plant it. It probably wouldn't come true anyway.
Well, that's always fun to do if you want to plant something, but as far as if you're going to spend money on a pomegranate plant, I would not suggest Wonderful based upon our own experience with it.
You said it was smaller. What was size was it?
The one that we liked was probably about the size of a baseball.
Okay.
But again, the flavor was so superior.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Oh, absolutely, really good.
Good. Yeah. Well, we'll keep tabs on that. I was in Walla Walla over the weekend and went when I passed through the passed by the exit signs to Goldendale. I was wondering about your. Are you still doing experiments over there?
No, we tore that out about 3 years ago. The Seaberry planting. And
that was it.
It was. We accomplished what we needed to accomplish there, and it's a little bit of a drive.
Yeah.
You know. So I
hear you there.
We took it away.
Right.
But we're now working on a project in the Dalles with apricot, so we'll be...
Oh, that's a little closer.
It's a little closer, but, it's a different... So we've given up one, and we're going to start another.
Okay, well, let's see. Anything you would like to say? We'll move on here before we get to the bottom of the hour so we can get to our garden stumper. Any tasks for storing fruits and vegetables that you'd like to...
Well,
talk about.
I hope some of the listeners have some good keeping varieties of apples because I love apples all winter and even this one variety, Wine Crisp.
Oh yeah, you were eating those into next summer.
I was eating them a month ago from last year. I mean, there were still most of them had failed, gone bad, but there were still a few good ones in my crate. But that's pretty long.
Yeah.
But I have fresh ones now, so I don't need to eat the old ones. We made with the grandkids. We made apple cider a couple of weeks ago. Had a lot of apples to
well, that's one way to preserve it.
Yeah, it's great. And then we freeze it. So we freeze gallon jugs of apple cider.
Well, what would you recommend for the average gardener on storing apples?
What variety?
Or just how to store them.
How to store them. Well, if you don't have a walk-in cooler like we do, which helps.
Well, that's why I said the average gardener.
Average gardener, yeah. I think, most people do it, in a garage or some an unheated outdoor structure is typically fine, unless it gets super cold. But even generally speaking,
you can move them.
Yeah, that's pretty unusual for us to get cold enough to hurt something inside a closed building.
Yeah. Well, my unattached garage, I'm sure, gets below freezing.
Yeah,
when it's 15 degrees out.
Yeah, that's still not. I mean, that's not typically going to hurt the fruit that badly if it's
an apple.
Apple.
Okay.
If it's, in our climate, we're pretty much okay. I mean, you could always go out and throw a blanket or something over the top. If they're sitting on the ground or on cement, there's some latent heat that comes up from the ground.
Yeah.
And you can trap that by just covering them up with some insulating material of some sort.
Right.
You know, but that's pretty, but I love storing the fruit that way because, it, you know, it doesn't, it's just so nice to have fresh apples in the winter.
Well, go ahead.
And we don't spray ours. So the important thing with storage is to kind of watch them. If you see signs of coddling moth, eat those first. It's because
sure.
They'll spoil faster than
right,
the ones
that
are solid.
The inside is affected.
Degraded.
Yes. And as you mentioned there, this wine crisp is a good storage apple. So this, you may not have that type of success with other species, other varieties.
Yeah, and you can learn about that if it's something, you know, if you have apples and you're not sure about how well they store, do an experiment with it.
Yeah.
You know, some will turn soft and become kind of less than totally desirable. The nice thing about wine crisp and its relatives is they tend to stay crisp, relatively crisp, and that's a nice feature too.
Yeah,
Gold Rush is another one that we store pretty well. It's a late ripening. It's usually a sign of a good storage apple.
I ought to try that. I've been getting lots of apples, Fuji apples from a neighbor. Actually, he's somebody that has. I have my bees in his backyard.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a lot of trees,
mm-hmm.
but and he doesn't spray either. So many of them, most of them, have some coddling moth damage, but not the other one, the apple maggot.
It would be interesting to see how well Fuji holds up.
Yeah, I'll try putting some in my crisper in the fridge.
Sure. And we were just in Hood River yesterday visiting our friend who's an orchardist, and we brought home a bag of Newtown pippins, which is another good storage apple, although I'm not sure how disease resistant it is here in our climate.
Oh, for growing, yeah.
But yeah, good one.
All righty. Well, and if you have potatoes, you know, they should be out of the ground by now. And the key there is to just check them regularly, because the rot will spread, like with most things. And they're just, in general, harder to store longer. So don't be surprised if they don't last but a couple of months.
Checking things is important because there's not only diseases and stuff that will affect your fruit in storage, but there are creatures that may also infiltrate the storage area.
Yeah. Good point there, too.
Yeah.
Onions, you know, it's too late really to do anything now. But once again, check those and store them in a cool place and don't pretty them up. Leave as many husks on as you can.
Mm-hmm.
That just helps with the storage and longer necks. That's also true with winter squash. The longer the neck, the better. And once again, even though I have some still out in the garden, I've harvested 90% of them. I left some before we left early October just to see how they would go. And so I've been eating those out of the garden. They won't store.
Another fruit that I'll mention, but it may become maybe our fruit of the month next month, so I won't go into it too much detail, but it's persimmon. Which right now, and if listeners have persimmons on their trees, I'm sure they're ripe and orange. And if they're depending, I have a new name for there's the crunchy sweet and the tender sweet. So,
yeah, I remember last year you had one that was. Oh, you used ethylene or something like that.
We did a treatment that was bizarre. Was so amazing. We learned it in Spain at a persimmon conference in 2016, where they take the tender sweet variety, which is firm, but you can't eat it when it's firm. You have to wait till it gets soft. they would take that variety, which is a hachia, is a popular one in California. It doesn't grow so well here, but there are other varieties that do well here of that type. Sajo, for example.
Uh-huh. And this is not the Fuyu type.
The Fuyu type.
Okay.
That's right.
And so these are more top-shaped, if you will.
Yes, typically more pointed.
Yeah.
And put them in a plastic bag. What we did, put them in a plastic bag, and push the plastic bag to get most of the air out of it, and then put from a CO2 cylinder we got at a brew supply store, put CO2 into the plastic bag, filled it with CO2, sealed it, and kept it at room temperature, 70 degrees, for 24 hours. The tender sweet persimmons still were firm, not totally firm, but they became edible.
Uh-huh.
And not only edible, but absolutely delicious.
You mean more delicious than the tender sweet ones?
More delicious than they would have had they just gone and to our taste. I mean, it was almost like a third fruit.
Uh-huh.
It had more of like a melon flavor.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, in fact,
I haven't tried it.
We need to do it soon because we have a lot of fruit on our trees that's ready to be processed. So, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get it on here. Let's go to our second musical selection, and then we'll come back with the Garden Stumper. I want to set this one up, though, because this is maybe what we need after last week's election results. Many of us will need this. This is by The Who, and I wrote down some things here that I got from Wikipedia about this song by The Who, Pete Townsend, the writer.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, once again, we're talking about the colors of leaves here, not politics, but it's called Blue, Red, and Gray. And it's it's acoustic ballad featuring Pete Townsend on lead vocals. And the only instruments on it is Pete Townsend playing ukulele, and then the bass player John Entwistle added brass, a band feel to it. And I just want to say that Rolling Stone named the song as the 17th best song by The Who. And that's pretty remarkable for this one that I'd really never paid attention to. It was stating the song was a moment of optimism amid the darkness, a simple, oddly beautiful ode to enjoying life that was written on the ukulele and recorded on a home demo. In contrast to many songs on The Who, this song features mostly positive lyrics with a repeating phrase of, quote, "I like every minute of the day." And cool. That's good. So, listen to that. It's a pretty short song, but this is The Who, Pete Townsend, essentially, Blue, Red, and Gray.
Some people seem so obsessed with the morning, get up early just to watch the sunrise. Some people like it more when there's fire in the sky. Worship the sun when it's high. Some people go for those sultry evenings, sipping cocktails in the blue, red, and gray. But I like every minute of the day. I like every second, so long as you are on my mind. Every moment has its special charm. It's alright when you're around, rain or shine. I know a crowd who only live after midnight. Their faces always seem so pale. And then there's friends of mine who must have sunlight. They say a suntan never fails. I know a man who works the night shift, feels lucky to get a job in something. And I like every minute of the day. I dig every second. I can laugh in the snow and rain. get a buzz from being cold and wet. But pleasure seems to balance out the pain. And so you see that I'm completely crazy. I even shun the south of France. The people on the hill, they say I'm lazy, but when they sleep I sing and dance. Some people have to have the sultry evenings, cocktails in the blue, red and gray. But I like every minute of the day. I like every minute of the day.
Well, that's pretty good advice.
Very nice song. I like it.
Yep.
I have to say real quickly, I get up usually around 6, turn on KBOO, listen to folk music, and the 2 days, there were two Dianes that play folk music, Diane Hunt and Diane Carl, Monday and Tuesday of this past week before the election. Well, actually, one was Election Day, and they played some great music and brought tears to my eyes, and this song did the same.
Well, we still have our gardens.
That's right.
All right. Okay, well, we've got the garden stumper. We got a garden stumper theme ready to roll there, Ty. Okay. Okay, let's, this is a two-parter, and the first person that has the, I don't care, we can give two prizes out for that matter, but the main one is you get extra points, I guess, if you get the second part, and the first person with the correct answer will get a free gardening hand tool sharpened at Cully Farm Store. The corner of Northeast 42nd and Alberta Street. So let's see here. What do I say here? This is a two-parter. Oregon now has an official state vegetable. Mm. What is it? This did not happen until there was a resolution that passed in, I think it was 2022, and it was then certified or whatever last year, 2023. So what is Oregon's official state vegetable? The second part, the bonus question is, before this resolution, there was another resolution that would have named another vegetable, but it never passed. That resolution was shelved, so that vegetable did not become it. So it's two different veggies. So what might that be? Okay, Jim, do you have an idea?
Beats the poop out of me.
Okay. All righty. Well, let's move on then. Oh, let's give the number, 503-231-8187. Okay, if you know the Oregon's official state vegetable. Now, I understand on the farm you've been digging rootstock.
Well,
not digging rootstock, digging bare root plants.
Yeah.
Getting them ready to ship.
Yeah, we have to grade them and go through a process. But yeah, this is the time of year once they go dormant. And we out here, out in the Liberal Nook, those of all the listeners, I'm sure, know where Liberal Oregon is.
Yeah. Well, you might remind them.
Okay. Because we live between Liberal and Needy. And Liberal is located between Molalla and Canby on Highway 213. There's an actual Liberal store. I don't know that it's functioning much anymore. There's a sawmill there, and we're just about a mile west of that sawmill.
That's a big sawmill. Or at least it stockpiles a lot of logs.
There's a lot of lumber piled up there, too. It's amazing. I mean, there's obviously a lot of demand for building things in places. But, yeah, so out in our area, we get cooler temperatures than Portland. So we have earlier dormancy, which is, you know, I mean, kind of good, but kind of bad, too. But we live with it. And so we're ready. Once the plants lose their leaves, like honeyberries, for example, are really early to go dormant, we can dig them.
And then once you dig them, do you heal them in some way? I mean, with sawdust or whatever, before you can be shipped?
Typically, we have a shed. We take them to the shed. They get kind of healed in the shed. We have sawdust in there and keep the roots moist. And then we grade them by size and bundle them. And then they go into the walk-in cooler.
Okay.
Where we store them so they don't start to grow before we want them to.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So we put them in the walk-in cooler, and they're stored there until they get shipped out to the customer. And if
one of our listeners also is not necessarily digging bare root trees, but anything that's dormant, you could dig it now and then heal it in like you just described.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a tree or something that you want to transplant.
Rosebush.
Yeah. Today might not be such a great day to do it, but
it's not going to dry out.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I wanted to mention in talking about this time of year at the nursery, people leaves, you know, you mentioned about picking up leaves off the street and how you compost them, I understand, right? You use them.
I use some, but mostly just as a mulch.
Mulch, yeah. So what some people in my neighborhood were doing, and this is it takes me back to about the 1950s, I guess, is they were burning the leaves. Like, to me, it was just like it was a stink that I didn't like. And why do that? I just couldn't, like, spread them out somewhere or compost them or do something with them. They're like a little gift from nature.
Yeah, a big gift, really.
Yeah, well, each one of them, you know, they got nutrients and they got good stuff in them. Let them go to work for you.
We had that on as one of our topics for last month, but it's just as relevant now.
Yeah.
Because there's still plenty, well, there's actually probably more leaves in the street.
There's lots and lots of leaves out there. Yeah, I mean, in our area, we get them all over the ground, of course, in the fields and stuff, too. And just a couple of slightly humorous things I should mention real quickly. On the way today, I walk from the MAC station by OMSI to the station here. And it takes me probably 25 minutes or so. Today was a rainy day, and I didn't actually notice that there was a big puddle at the corner of Stark Street and Sandy. I didn't notice it until my feet were wet. How could that be? You know, it's like, anyway. Mm. And then after that, I thought of a funny thing to tell you, which is kind of a little word game I do with my grandkids and my partner. It's because because of my poor eyesight, I don't have peripheral vision to the right side.
Oh.
So I want people to be on my left side so I can see them when I'm walking with them. So left is right and right is wrong.
Oh, that's a good way to remember it. Casey.
Left is right, right is wrong. But you think of it, it's kind of like funny.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's clever.
It is clever.
That's like the saying that the one person says, two wrongs don't make a right, or two negatives don't make a right, but no. How does that go?
Well,
two rights make a wrong. Anyway.
maybe a listener can help us with that.
Yeah, the punchline is, but two negatives don't make a positive. Like two positive make a negative. It doesn't make any sense. But two negatives don't make a positive, and the person says, yeah, right. Anyway.
So and then I just have to share one other.
We got to go to the phone, too. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, we have a phone call?
Yes.
Oh, let's take the phone call.
Okay. Hopefully the caller is still there. Good morning. Sorry for the delay. Nope. We lost him.
Oh, darn. I didn't know.
Yeah. Hello?
Oh, yes. You're still there.
I'm still here. Yeah, I'm still here.
Great. You're on.
I'm calling about the state vegetable.
I'm sorry? Yes, calling about the state vegetable.
Yeah, it's a potato.
That's right. Ding-a-ling-ling.
Wow, that's interesting. I thought Idaho was the potato state.
Well, as I was coming back from Walla Walla, you know, went through Umatilla area there, and there's big Lamb Weston factory processing facility there with a potato on it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that Idaho doesn't grow potatoes.
Do you know what vegetable was the one that was not passed as the state vegetable?
God, you know, I don't think I do.
All right. Well, we could ask for another. We could wait for a caller, but...
But she should get a sharpening.
Well, she will get a sharpening, yeah. If you hang on here, and Ty will take your contact information so that I can let you know that you're it.
All right, great.
Great, thank you. So hang on, and Ty will get your information. He's on the phone right now, but he'll get to you there. Okay, well, so yes, potato.
That's interesting. I would not have guessed that for some reason. I not that it.
What do you think might have?
For a commercial crop, you know, Western Oregon doesn't. I mean, I don't think potatoes are grown widely.
No, not at all. But no. I mean, we're not all of Oregon.
I know.
At least not yet. They might be part of Idaho.
All right. Let's not go there. I mean, my neighbor, you know, I guess the liberal vegetable might be the winter squash for the region.
Yeah, I can understand why that one isn't it.
Yeah, but the winter squash, my neighbor grows. I mean, he grows tons of literally. I mean,
sure.
I think I told you one acre. His low harvest is 20 tons of winter squash on an acre of ground. Crazy.
Well, one other agricultural tidbit from Turkey, they grow lots of pumpkins, but they're not bright orange. They're just very drab because they harvest them solely for the seeds.
Seeds, yeah.
Yeah, that's just a snack.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Huh. Well, I was going to share another funny little word game with you. So a while back, we played Uno. That's one of my grandkids' favorite games. And by the way, they're nine right now, 9, 7, and 4. So we played Uno, and four of us played, and one won none, two won one, and one won two.
There it is.
There you go. And it's funny because the middle grandson, the 7-year-old, remembered that. So he kept repeating it. So he wanted to tell his parents. So he really liked that, you know.
Anyway. Well, okay. All righty. Well, we have some more to go on here. Protecting plants and pipes. We should talk about that. I think a great thing to do is to mulch plants. And this is good timing now. As Jim said, the plants are dormant. And because if you put mulch on too early, you kind of keep the ground warmer longer, and that could delay dormancy. So, but this is a good time, even though it hasn't been cold, the plant is dormant already. So pile on those leaves, which is what I did over some of my beds. Mm-hmm. And I will be doing that more. I've done a little bit of my dahlia beds because I don't dig them. There's something to protect them, and I may lose a few, but not many. And the same with pipes, you know, drain them. That's the best thing if you can. If you have outdoor irrigation, you must have some outdoor irrigation.
Oh yeah. We drain stuff. We cover things too that are, if like there's an outdoor valve that's attached to a building, we'll cover it with something because we can't drain it. In some cases, but yeah, I mean that sneaks up on you too. You know, you go to bed some night and it clears off, and all of a sudden the temperature drops into the 20s, and oh my God! So
yeah,
important to
what do you do with you have drip tape or some kind of does that stay in in the ground?
Yeah, that doesn't get the plastic. You know, drip tape doesn't get hurt by cold. It's just the valve that's feeding it has to be covered.
Because when water freezes, it expands. But in the drip tape, the frozen water just pushes out the plastic a little bit.
Yeah, I mean it's not that tight either. You know, I mean by the time we stop irrigating it, in August, so by the time it's pretty much evaporated. I mean whatever's in the drip tapes is pretty much gone away by the time the cold weather hits.
Okay. All righty. Let's see. Do we, anything else you want to cover here? Oh, let's take another phone call.
Great.
Wait.
Tangent here. I wanted.
There we go. Go ahead. Yep, you're on.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah. So my guess for the state vegetable was going to be green beans, but I was in the middle of rebuilding a wheel for my bike. But now I want to guess the one that was refused might have been green beans. Is that possible? We produce a lot of them.
That's correct, and not as many as we used to.
Wow. I'm sorry. I didn't.
No. You're correct in your assessment that we grow a lot of them.
Sorry,
but that's not what was. That's not
I'm
what was.
Down still.
Okay, good. Yeah, a lot of people my age and probably your age used to pick green beans as kids in the
strawberries too. But strawberries? But some people consider it a fruit, as I do.
So that's a good guess. But that was not.
We're not there yet. Okay,
that's right. Okay, thanks. Back to the wheel. All right, we have a few minutes here.
Sure.
what's our Dirtbag Dictionary term? What did you decide to go on? Cambium?
Cambium.
Okay, yes, briefly.
Okay, right. So cambium is a very important concept with plants because you look at a plant, a tree or a shrub or whatever, and what you see is you see the surface of the plant, and that's the bark. The bark basically protects the layer of cells underneath, which are the cells that grow and make the plant bigger. And that's the cambium. And a cambium layer is this very important part. And especially if you're grafting, for example, which we do a lot of, or budding, when you're propagating plants, you want to make sure that your propagule, which would be the scion wood or the bud, the cambium layer of that particular part of the plant is in contact with the cambium layer of the rootstock, for example, that you're putting it on. And they will, if they are of appropriate relationship to each other,
right,
they will join together and make a new plant that way.
So we're matching up.
We're matching up the
cambium layers.
Cambium layers, yeah.
But you can't just create a Frankenstock because you can't graft, an oak tree onto an apple.
No. And that's a miracle. I mean, to me, you know, plant world is very, very interesting. And the people who studied it and created identified the species and the varieties and the families, all that, I mean, that's all plays into that compatibility issue.
Yeah.
You know, of what works and what doesn't.
Well, I can understand exactly how people would have discovered this when they see just in a tree someplace the branches crossed just naturally and then they grew together. It's just obvious that something is going on there, and so that goes one thing leads to another.
Sure.
Let's take one more call, Jim.
Sure.
Okay. Nick.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a question for you. I found a persimmon tree. They're the long Hachia persimmons. They're like very long, different, and they have sort of crevices in them, and they're not ripe yet. Is it too late for them in Portland?
Okay. So, what is it? What color is the fruit?
They're like half orange, half green.
Hmm. That's interesting. So I actually have a Hachia tree at the nursery, and the orange and the fruit is orange. So my guess is that this tree is probably not Hachia. I mean, because that's to be in Portland to not have a fully orange fruit this time of year, unless it was in the shade or something.
Are you in Portland?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Why did you think it was Hachia? I'm sorry, maybe I missed that a little bit.
Because it's very long. It's It's like a hachia that's like even skinnier and longer, but it's definitely a persimmon.
Okay, okay. Yeah, my guess is it's not hachia. Hachia doesn't ripen very well for me. I first found it in Portland. A friend of mine I met many, many years ago, I met a man who was growing it. But yeah, it still has green, and the leaves are probably turning now. Once the leaves turn and fall, the fruit won't ripen any further. Although some people will actually harvest persimmons in certain regions of the world when they still have some green, and you can try that and, you know, see what happens after you pick it and put it on the counter and see what it could develop into something reasonably good. But
they will ripen if they're pale orange.
Yeah, I mean they're better if they're fully orange, but yeah, they are acceptable sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
if they're pale.
Yeah, I mean they're very hard, so they're far from being soft. But yeah. Do you think have you ever done the CO2 or I've also heard of the alcohol? So they do this in Europe also. Mm-hmm. They put alcohol in a closed container with it.
Yeah, I've heard of that too.
We're going to have to wrap up here, Jim. We're right up there against noon.
Yeah, sorry about that. But your questions are good, and we can talk more next month.
Yeah, report back, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh, a whole month. Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. But try putting it on your counter and see what it
might as well.
But it's one of my persimmons are one of my favorite subjects. By the way.
All right. Okay. Well, sorry to be short here. Yeah, we're right at noon here. Jim, thanks a lot. Ty. Thanks for coming in. I guess we're done. Yeah. I guess we're done. No. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. If you want to play the last tune, it's Purple. Purple Heart by the Blue Binos, Monty. Big Monty. Jim, thanks a lot. This is Glenn Andreessen. We will have a taped show next month. Yeah.
Is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.